Well, hello. This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and I'm here in the studio today with the very funny actor Natalie Morales.
Hello. How are you?
Nice to meet you, Natalie.
You too.
Thank you for coming in and doing this.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So the reason I wanted to have you in for this very special episode is you have a new scripted podcast coming out called Ellie in the Wave.
Correct.
Can you tell us about it?
You know, it's a scripted story about the end of the world, but it's a comedy.
Yeah.
In a sense. It's not, I don't know. It's sort of a life story. It's in the near future, I would say like 30 years from now, a computer virus sweeps the globe and erases everybody's data, like photos, emails, medical records, literally everything. And by that time, nothing is on paper anymore. Mm-hmm. Everything is digital. So it really just like all your text messages, all your photos, all your videos are gone forever.
Yeah. So it's sort of about like what would happen if that happened and how it would affect people.
Not entirely. It's mostly about this one woman's life. And she decides before the virus hits her, she bought these like 8 tapes at a pawn shop, and she's gonna record like the sound of the videos of her life and also talk about her life and just have a record that's
kind of preserve,
analog.
Yeah, I got to listen to the first couple episodes.
Oh, cool.
And really enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Mean, it's very unique story, and I think it is about, it's sort of less about the tech element of it, more about memory and how you know looking back on your life and what memory means in this time when everything is recorded.
Yeah, because it's not, I mean, it's not like the end of the world, but it is the end of the digital world, right? So it's like, yes, it's a huge deal, but like no one is dying except for maybe those who need their medical records.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a bunch of really great people in it, like Paul Scheer and June Diane are in it, and Josh Rubin, and like just some really talented comedy actors. Serena Fialo's in it. It's really, Angela Trimber's in it. It's really fun.
Yeah. So, and you're also a producer on it, right? So how did you kind of get involved in this project to begin with?
Well, they asked me to do it, and I was like, only if I could be a producer.
And why was that?
Because
was that
I'm a control freak, apparently. No, because I was like, well, if I'm going to be talking for, you know, 8 episodes, I just want to, and I'm going to contribute anyway, like as far as, you know, my thoughts on the creative, because Dan Powell, who executive produced this, who also, you know, he executive produced Inside Amy Schumer. He's just like a delightful comedy genius. He was very open to collaboration, too. So I was like, well, give me a title. It was just because I really believed in it and I really liked the project. So I wanted to be involved with it in many ways as possible.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, it is a lot of you talking.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I hope it's not too boring. It comes out once a week. So I think that'll be good. It'll be,
they're nice kind of short, like 25 minute episodes.
Yeah.
What was that? What was the process like of recording it? Because it seems like it must have taken some time to get all that recording done.
Yeah. We did it, I think, over 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
1 day was literally me talking for 8 hours straight. Had a lot of honey and hot tea that day. And then the next day I got to hang out and play with a bunch of really funny people, which was really fun.
So for you, you know, why this idea of the wave and everything getting wiped out, did that appeal to you because you are particularly addicted to technology, or are you kind of scared of technology? What's your relationship with, you know, with your phone? How addicted would you say you are?
You know, that's interesting. I really like, without wasting paper, I like to keep like an analog, you know, library of things that are important to me. So I shoot a lot of like film photography because I really like, I think it is a bygone wonderful time where you take a picture of someone and then wait like 3 months and be like, oh, what did that look like? And I like having a camera around and just like taking pictures of my friends and situations and then being surprised a month later when it comes. That's just a really joyous feeling to me. So I have a lot of photos like that. I try and do that. I try and take a camera to every important or fun event so that I have that. So it's not all just on my phone.
And when you go to get them developed, people are like surprised.
What are you doing?
Yeah, what is
There's
this?
Like two places that you can get stuff developed these days. Yeah. It's really crazy. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, a lot of this, a lot of my work lives only digitally because like a lot of stuff that I've made never got put on a DVD, you know? Mm. Yeah, I don't, it's that, that would be sad. It's
if things like, get, if the idea of things getting wiped out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess part of the reason anybody does television or movies is so that they can some way live forever, you know? Mm,
yeah.
So that would be sad if my plan didn't work.
Yeah. But is there another part of you that would welcome, you know, a break from all of this stuff?
Absolutely. I remember like a week and a half ago, it'll be like 3 weeks ago for the people who are listening, that like Instagram was down and everyone was like, oh no, Instagram's down. And then they just like live their lives for
yeah,
a day.
Yeah.
And that was just so... I think it was both. I think it was Instagram and mm-hmm. Twitter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, what? This should be a planned outage. Mm-hmm. Like on Sundays, there should just be no Instagram yeah. and Twitter.
That would be nice.
And then you can just like take a breath and not feel bad about your body for like a day.
Yeah. That's how I feel. That's how I feel about planes. I really enjoy going on planes and not having internet, even though now
you can
get internet, yeah. but I kind of convinced myself and pretend that you can't.
Yes. Yeah, I also do that because it's too expensive sometimes.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's too expensive. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
If you do get it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So just like having 6 hours of no internet. Is
You know what
is quite
I like
nice.
Is that some airlines do the thing where you can have you don't have to pay for being able to get text messages.
Oh, yeah. That's
I think
a
it's
good
like
one.
JetBlue who
like,
does
so
that. And that's
text.
Nice because yeah. then you can communicate with people.
with no distractions.
With Yeah. And then just, I don't know, watch the movie on the tiny screen or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this podcast kind of falls in the genre of dystopian fiction in some
mm-hmm.
ways.
Yeah, totally.
Are you a fan of that genre?
You know, I'm gonna say yes/no because
yeah.
I feel like we have a fascination with dystopia. Like we just do. We like to see how can I curse on this?
Yeah.
How fucked up things can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe some people use it as a warning mechanism. But I think it's also, I don't know. It's, I just, maybe I used to like it more than I do now.
Because
I think
it's a little too real.
Yeah.
Now.
Like I just decided sometime like a year ago that I was just done watching bleak shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm just.
It's no Handmaid's Tale for
no.
you.
No. And yeah. I recognize that it's well done and I recognize that they're doing something important, but like, too many rapes. I just don't want to see it.
Yeah.
I just, my brain and eyeballs can no longer see it.
Mm-hmm.
I just have no capacity for it. And that's me personally. That particular subject just kind of went a little bit nuts on my Twitter, which is such a douchebag thing to say. But I wrote a thing about how I was like done watching rape on TV and it exploded and went really viral, which I did not expect. And
what kind of responses did you get?
I got mostly like a lot of people agreeing, like so many people agreeing. And then some people were like, well, but you can't censor people. You can't just say that it can't be done. And I was like, in no way was that what I was saying. Please continue to make whatever you want to make, especially if you're a survivor telling your story, which is never the case with someone depicting rape on TV. Personally, my eyeballs cannot anymore. So, and not only is it, you know, sexual violence related, but just in general, like when the world sucks, like why am I going to take my free time, my like precious hours of free time, and like watch something that makes me sad or feel even more bleak than the rest of the day does, you know?
Yeah. Well, you definitely should not watch Years and Years, which is that HBO show that came out.
I know. I heard that it was really good, though.
It is. I watched it. It's good, but it's
bleak.
Dark. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so close to home.
Yeah.
Like in Handmaid's Tale, it's kind of like you're removed from it a little bit. Like it's this alternate universe. This is like our universe where Trump has been reelected and like it's like
very 4 years
specific.
Into the future.
Yeah. So like starts like 4 years in the future and then keeps going out from there and
like
things
broke
get worse
my heart
and worse.
A little bit just hearing you say that.
Yeah. It's rough. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's tough to watch. But I mean, this podcast, Ellie and the Wave is so much more personal.
Yeah. It's not about that at all. There's actually zero bleakness in it, which I like. It's really about a person re-examining her life. through actually sitting down and watching it from birth to present day, and like going, she live streamed a lot and Insta storied a lot. Mm-hmm. So a lot, it's like a lot of everyday stuff. And like, she examines her relationships with people and like goes through her old texts and stuff and goes like, oh, I thought this went this way. And it like absolutely mm-hmm. did not go that way. It went this way, you know, it's really about hindsight and like what that can mm-hmm. do.
Have you had that experience of going back and seeing something? Like,
totally.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I used to, back when I like instant messengered a lot, mm-hmm. you know, I used to save chats that I thought were monumental in my life. Most of them were like chats with my then boyfriend or something mm-hmm. about, you know, some fight, some instant messenger argument. And I've gone and I've found them and been like, I was so right. Like mm-hmm. mostly it's me feeling that I was right.
Yeah.
It's hardly ever me feeling that I was wrong, but I'm sure that has happened at some point or another.
Yeah. So something else that I wanted to ask you about, I hadn't seen this when I hadn't read it when it came out, but I was really moved by your essay, that you wrote about coming out as queer. I think a couple years ago. So why did you want to do that, and how are you kind of feeling about your decision to make that statement now that it's been a little bit?
I feel really great about it. I'm really, really happy that I did it. I think what made me do it was just that I had I was out with my friends, like mm-hmm. everybody except for like some family members did not know, mm-hmm. right? Knew. Everybody except for some family members knew. So I was living this life normally, and then sort of publicly, because I'm a private person, and you know, not only do I assume people don't care, but I also don't want them to know anything about me mm-hmm. whatsoever. The worst thing I can imagine is some stranger having some familiarity with my life that mm-hmm. makes me feel so weird. Like if someone's like, hey, I saw your mom on a thing and I don't know them, that would make me want to crawl out of my skin. Mm-hmm. So I just was like, I can be a supporter of LGBTQ plus rights and from afar. Like I don't have to say that I'm a part mm-hmm. of this community to support it. And then I realized that I did.
Yeah.
I did have to say that I was a part of it because there were people that were seeing me on TV, and because there was a movie coming out that I was doing called Battle of the Sexes, where I was playing a lesbian woman. Mm-hmm. And it was that movie was very much about Billie Jean King and the Battle of the Sexes, where she...
I love that movie, and you're great in
thank
it.
Thank you. And her coming to terms with her sexuality is such a huge part of that movie. And I really was like, I felt like kind of a hypocrite if I was about to do all this press and mm-hmm. not be like, you know, not say mm-hmm. that. So I was thinking about myself as a kid and like, you know, watching Buffy and watching Xena mm-hmm. and if any of those people, like how important that Sarah Michelle Gellar, Selma Blair in Cruel Intentions kiss was to me as a kid. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. if any of those people had been like, hey, I'm queer. I'm not straight. Mm-hmm. and I'm normal and my life is happy and healthy and people still love me and you're going to be fine. If anybody had said that, my teen years would have been dramatically easier mm-hmm. and yeah. different. Not only because of, you know, exterior pain inflicted upon me, but in mm-hmm. interior stuff, like how much I beat myself up for what I thought was weird or bad mm-hmm. Or sinful or, you know, or not normal or whatever. And so I was like, God, if there's some kid that likes something I did, or an adult that still hasn't come out, or an adult who's a parent to a kid or whatever, if there's one person that will feel a little bit more normal and a little bit more understood by this, then it's 1,000 times like worth doing mm-hmm. it. Yeah.
And you wrote the essay for the Smart Girls mm-hmm. website,
Amy Poehler's
site, Amy Poehler's, which is really geared towards younger girls and young women. So did you hear from people, you know, after you did it, that after you wrote that?
Yeah, I heard from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I heard from a lot of people who decided to come out after that. I heard from a lot of people who had already come out and had been shunned by their communities. I heard from a lot of people who were too afraid to come out, and were so thankful to have just somebody else to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I live in LA most of the time, and I think when you live in like a big city like LA or New York, you feel like kids in schools are gay and it's normal now and it's not a big deal. But that is not the case in most places in America or most places in the world, you know, especially not the case for Latino kids in Latino families who are mostly religious. And so it's you forget how important it is mm-hmm. to still do that. I mean, like, you know, yeah. And to also put that representation on TV, like I just did this NBC series called Abby's, where the lead character was the first bisexual lead of any network show ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And was that
any
your,
network comedy? Yeah.
Was that the way it was written, or was that part of your influence on it?
I think it was both. The creator had the idea to, he asked me if I would be open to do it, and I was like, oh my God, yes. Mm-hmm. Because we wanted to make it a normal thing and like just one of the many, many things about her. I just think that that's really important to see. Like, Will and Grace directly affected so many, like, actual policy change. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, Will and Grace affected Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's we move culture, but like art moves culture forward. Yeah. Because we normalize things. And you know, if you hadn't ever met a gay person and you watched Will and Grace, then they weren't so foreign to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's that thing, you know? That people always say that when they have a gay person in their life, they think about it so differently. So this is like,
exactly.
Having, if you don't have someone in your life,
exactly.
then you have these characters
on
TV that you get to know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Abby's was canceled
yeah.
recently.
Yeah,
I mean,
so much for diversity.
were you pretty disappointed about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I was really disappointed. It sucked. It sucked really hard. I mean, I think we did a really great thing, and I'm really proud of what we did, and I'm so happy I got to work with all of those people. I think, if I'm being honest, it's bullshit to tout, you know, all of these firsts and all this inclusion and mm-hmm. all this like diversity push, and then not market the show whatsoever.
Yeah,
at all,
and not give it a chance
really. At all. Yeah. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I was told this. It was the first show in the history of NBC that got zero outdoor marketing.
Wow.
So that tells you something.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not thankful for the people who put it on the air. I just feel like, you know, if you're gonna say that you're about diversity, then actually, like, you know, walk the walk. You know.
Yeah. So you have this podcast coming out. What else, do you have anything else coming up that you're really excited about, or things that you really want to do, or just kind of?
Yeah. I'm in this weird crossroads moment where I really want to do my own stuff, mm-hmm. and I can either like focus on other people's work, you know, other people's creations and act in them, or direct them. But I've been amassing this huge pile of stuff that I've written, and that me and my writing partner and best friend Serena Fiala have written, that we're really excited about making. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I'm directing a bunch and I'm writing a bunch. So
that's great.
I'm excited about those things.
Yeah. Before we kind of start to wrap up, I wanted to ask, if you have any good Parks and Rec stories that you could share with us, because I think a lot of people know you from that show. I loved you on that show.
Yeah, thanks.
When you think about your time on that show, what does anything come to mind?
There's a few things. I mean, that was so lovely. It was my favorite show before I was on it. Mm-hmm. To get on it, I did the audition was to play Aziz's new love interest, and to do it, I did an impression of Aziz at my audition.
Did that make it into the show? I don't remember.
No, they were like, that was great. Don't do that. and so that was fun. But yeah, I mean, like, it was just such a fun group of people. And Mike Schur, obviously, who I worked with again on Abby's, is like a hero.
He's a special guy.
He's so, not only is he amazing at what he does, he's amazing. He's an amazing person. Mm-hmm. So just working with him in general, I will do as long as he will have me for the rest of my life. he's just awesome. And yeah, I mean, like, Chris, as far as funny memories, like, Chris Pratt, it, like, everything really hilarious that you saw on screen was him ad-libbing. It was him making something up. I mean, the writers were obviously unbelievable, as they've all gone on to do other really great things. But Chris Pratt would always just find this gold in the Andy character that was, like, so amazing. Yeah, they were, it was really fun. Amy Poehler would have, like really, like, really filthy rap dance parties after lunch in the makeup and hair trailer, where, like, that was a scheduled part of the day. It was, like, 10 minutes of dancing after lunch, which is an amazing way to get your energy back after the lunch slump, you know?
That's not typical of most sets, I imagine.
No, I mean, no, but if you're Amy Poehler, you can make shit happen, and that's a good thing to make happen. It was really fun. I mean, she totally made my day when she asked me to dance once. It's great. Yeah.
That's great. You also, you're in a movie out now, Stuber.
Yeah.
Which is really fun.
Yeah.
Is there anything when you, your time on that, that that comes to mind, stories or memories from making it?
Yeah, I mean, it stars Dave Bautista and Kumail Nanjiani, and it's, I mean, Betty Gilpin's also in it, although I didn't act with her. We never had any scenes together. We did see each other a couple times on the set because we shot in Atlanta, but we never had any scenes together. We'd spent the most time together doing like the junkets and stuff, and so many people asked us the same exact questions.
Oh, really?
Everybody was like, when you do a press junket, you sit in a hotel room, and then there's a rotating like caravan of really nice, nervous people who are interviewing you.
I've been those people, so I know what it's like.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are, I don't know, the people that, maybe since you've been those people, you know, like, maybe people are mean. I don't know what it is, but we were really like, it's okay, guys. This is fun. We're all doing it together.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. But they'd all ask us, every single person was like, so what's your craziest Uber story, ride share story? And so we said our stories, and like, how many crazy stories can you have, right? Or the craziest. So we said it about six times, each of us. And then we looked at each other in between a thing, and we were like, I dare you to make up one.
It's time.
Let's make up crazy ones. So we, about, like, I don't know, the next five interviews, all of our Uber stories are completely made up and just for the purposes of making each other laugh. And it was really, that was really, really fun.
Did any of them make it into print or on TV that you saw? Or
I'm not sure yet, but I'm sure. I mean, they were all going to go somewhere. So yeah, I did not take an Uber with Nicolas Cage. That's a lie.
Okay. For anyone out there who read that.
Yeah, that was a lie.
That sounds like a great story.
Right? And then the whole key was to make it up like on the spot. And it was very, very
funny.
It's
like an improv game.
Yeah, it was very funny. It was very funny. Because we knew the question was coming, and then we'd get so excited.
We end every episode by asking the guests, what's the last thing that made you laugh really hard?
Ooh. Good question. My best friends and I had like a 90s night where we watched First Wives Club, which I had never seen.
Classic.
Which is very funny. Yeah. I did not know how funny it was. There's this really amazing scene where I think it was, I recorded it, I'll show you later,
okay,
where they are trying to hide. I guess there's no spoilers. This movie's like 25 years old.
I think you're safe.
Yeah. They are trying to hide from some people by going out on a balcony. And then they get in like a window washing machine situation, right? And Diane Keaton looks over the balcony and is so freaked out by the height that she throws herself back, and her glasses go all the way to the back of her head and then land back perfectly on her face. And it's an obvious like mistake that happened. And it's so funny to see. And she's very overdramatic. And Bette Midler is trying very hard not to break while looking at her.
You can tell.
It was very funny. But so then after that, we like put on just a YouTube playlist of 90s music videos. And they're so funny. Some of them are so, some of them that I haven't seen in so long are so funny. There are some dance moves in NSYNC's I Want You Back that are, I mean, gold. Like, you should watch it. It's so funny. So that's the last time. That was like a couple
those
days
are,
ago.
Those are two good recommendations. Yeah, First Wives Club and NSYNC.
It was a very funny night. I laughed really, really hard.
Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming and doing this today.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Happy to be here.
Thanks again to Natalie Morales for dropping by the studio today. The first episode of her podcast, Ellie and the Wave, is available now wherever you get your podcasts, and the next episodes will continue to roll out every Thursday. You can also see Natalie opposite Dave Bautista and Kumail Nanjiani in the movie Stuber, which is playing in theaters now. If you enjoy this show, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch for Starburns Audio and edited by Mackenzie Mazel. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find the show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. We'll be back with a brand new full-length episode on Tuesday.